S-R-N. Start a film school episode with the applause should have been more polite. It's more of a lecture,
is it,
than a show, is it? I don't know. Welcome to, that was a weird way to start that. Welcome to the second Crespo Diso Film School. I was trying to remember.
Yes.
I was struggling to remember.
Numero dos.
That's what we're calling it. Numero dos. That's all the Spanish we know. We're doing a David Fincher episode, as in case you couldn't tell by the title of the show that you just clicked on. Some people might click on things without reading them. They're so excited to see what's next. They'll just click on it. Just click on anything. That happens sometimes.
It does.
So you gotta let them know up front, this is about David Fincher.
Who's David? Oh my god, it's Chris Crespo's face. Yeah. Gotta click on it.
Exactly. People are just compelled to hit that face.
Yes.
Just to hit it. Click it. Click it hard. See what happens. That was an awkward. Anyway. David Fincher. Who is David Fincher, you ask? Well, that's what we're about to get into. That's our thing. He's a great filmmaker. He's working to this day. He's only like, I should know his age, but I forgot. He's like 50 years old. So still has plenty left in the tank. Only 9 feature films, but a ton of music videos. We'll be talking about some of those. David Fincher is one of our more, I would say, interesting mainstream directors. What do you say?
Definitely. Oh, I mean,
did I introduce you to Drew Chicago?
I don't think you did.
This
doesn't
Chicago
matter.
You get one of those because people love you so much. People love the producer. I was talking to we were at the SBK Live music showcase.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to a friend of the show. You know what I'm talking about. He knows what I'm talking about. And he said he really digs the dynamic of you being all negative about everything.
Correct.
Like being much more positive.
Yeah.
About
he actually asked me about that. He asked him if I'm negative like that all the time.
Oh.
Or is this like,
no,
you know, a spiel?
No.
You know, that I am. That's the way I roll.
No. What you hear is what you get with Drew Chicago. That is for sure. Yeah, so but I think, though, this is going to be a lot of positive talk about David Fincher because
the guy
makes some pretty dark movies, which is something I think you, a negative person, would appreciate.
I love all the movies that he's made. In fact, some of most
really
of the
you
movies...
love all of them? Do you really love all of them? I can think of one you probably don't love that no one does.
1, 2, 3, 4...
Count them off.
Five of the 9 are... probably on my list of top 25.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yep. Goddamn. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be good. This is going to be good stuff. We're going to get a lot of stuff from Drew Chicago on the David Fincher topic. Looking forward to it. This is going to be great. Before we get into any of that, ChrisCrespo.com. Please go there if you haven't already. Trying to keep it populated with reviews and Netflix picks and stuff like that. Keep it entertaining for you. Check it out. Also, hit the show up on Twitter at Crespo Diso. If you're on Twitter right now, tweet it out there. You're listening to a hashtag Cinema Crespo Diso. Let the world know that you're getting down with the two dopest dudes around. Crespo poetry right there.
In motion.
Alright. Before we do, I did want to talk about this before we get into the actual David Fincher stuff. Real quick. Because I don't know where else to put this, and I want to talk about it while it's fresh, so I'm just going to put it right here. Tangent. Did my first stint for jury duty. Have you ever done jury duty?
No.
Have you ever gotten the notice?
No.
The summons?
It's because most of the time I don't register to vote until I have to.
Okay.
So, you know.
Is that thing, should I deregister?
For a long, because you know,
and then register again when I need to vote.
Exactly. See, I have.
That sounds like a
I still actually I have to register to vote soon, so I can vote in November.
Yeah.
Normally, I would just wait until the next election.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Well, hell, they got the primaries now. You can vote on that.
Yeah.
Anyway, All right, well, that's a maybe. Maybe I should consider voting less.
I just wait. No, I don't necessarily vote less. It's just.
Well, I'm just saying.
It helps when you switch counties too. When you move,
then they can't find you.
Exactly.
Now they're just like, where's this guy? Where does this guy go? Well, they found me, Drew. They fucking found me.
No,
jury duty, Ninth Circuit, Orange County.
Mm-hmm. Sounds miserable.
Oh my god, dude! I hated it. Every second of it, I hated it.
Did you fantasize about murdering people?
No.
That's what I do when I'm in situations like that.
No. No murder fantasies, gotta say.
It's a shame.
I spent half the day like listening to podcasts, just sitting in a chair, just listening. They never call. Well, not they never. I got there at, maybe get there at 8 a.m.
Okay.
All right.
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Orientation started at 8:30, where they played this sweet video. The only thing that I really appreciated happened in the very beginning.
Was the video.
Not even the video itself, because the video that was just the worst. They even said, here's a video we made. And as soon as they said, we made it, I was like, uh-oh. Here we go. Here's a bunch of tripods and anyway. But no. The first person that came out and spoke on the mic was a podium. Huge room full of people, hundreds of people. Podium up front. This lady got behind the mic. This lady was cracking jokes, too, throughout the whole thing, trying to get people to loosen up.
Yeah.
Which I guess I appreciated, but I was like, lady, I don't want to be loosened up. I want to be set free.
Exactly. Call my name. Let's do this shit. Get me the fuck out of here.
So she starts off like, on behalf of Judge Belvin Perry Jr., and then like another judge, and then the rest of blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, Belvin, that's right. This is good old Belvin Perry's territory. And then when the video started, he was like the one of the very first people.
Like, hi, and I'm Melvin Perry.
He was like, obviously,
I
reading.
I have two first names.
He was looking off to the side and obviously reading as opposed to, you know, speaking from the heart, which is cool, Judge. He's still a pretty cool guy. That's the only thing. I was like, hey, is that guy? He was on TV. He's practically a TV judge thanks to that that trial business that happened a while ago.
Yep.
And then outside of that, dude, the whole presentation thing ended at like 9:30, and then they called. Like, we're going to call it 40 names and numbers. You guys line the fuck up. Like, hits, like, Death Squad, terrible Nazi Germany. They're, like, lining you all up to get you out of here. Called 40 people. My number not called. And then, like, immediately after that, another 20. Number not called. All these people disappear, presumably, to be slaughtered somewhere.
Yes.
And then, I wait a while. Like, half an hour goes by. Like, all right, here we go. Another judge needs people. We need 40 people are going to be called. And I'm looking around, like, this has to be it. 40 people. They call 40 numbers.
Not yours.
Not mine. Immediately after that, like another 10 or 20, not called. And then nothing again until 11:45. No, not even. It was like 11:30. They're like, all right, you guys, you can go to lunch. You got to be back here by 1:15.
Okay.
So I had like an hour and 45 minutes.
Just to hang out.
Oh, my
somewhere
God.
Somewhere downtown.
It doesn't take that long to eat. I got three double D's at Gringo's.
Nice.
I was like, I got extra time.
Yeah, I got time to spend. And you'd sit there and savor them.
And then even then, I was like, I got so much time to kill. And it was so fucking hot yesterday. Anyway, afternoon rolls around. Get there at 1:15. At that point, there's like, I look around, I try to count it out. And there's only maybe 100 people in there, 150 people.
Mm-hmm.
So they come up, like, we're calling 40 more numbers. Like, here we go. This is it. This is my time to shine. Not called. It's like, God damn it. Then I'm sitting around and there's like maybe, I don't know, handful of people in there scattered about all throughout the place, like just the tumbleweeds of a horrible desert of human waste.
Uh-huh.
And finally, about 3:15, and I actually heard him because the office thing was like kind of open.
Yeah.
And you could kind of, I was sitting kind of close to it, so I heard the ladies talking. And it was quiet in there because there were so few people in there. And I heard one of them say, just say the names, blah, 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 something, something. Then I heard Christopher. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, all right. Well, there's only a fucking handful of people. It's got to be. And then sure enough, they call my number. They take us upstairs. 3:15, they take us outside a courtroom. And they're like, you guys just wait here. And then the lady fucking disappears. And
yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, please wait.
We stood around there for half an hour.
Sweet.
Then a deputy came out. And I was like, all right, you guys can go.
Awesome. Thank you.
Nothing.
So you sat in a room for like 6 hours.
I sat in a room from 8 a.m. until 3:15.
And then you...
Then I stood in the hallway,
For a half hour, then we went home.
Then I went home.
That was jury duty?
And then that was jury duty. And I don't have to go through that shit for another 12 months.
That's awful.
And And thank God they pay me at work for jury duty.
So oh, I get, good I get for you. Wage.
Otherwise,
yeah, you'd have been really angry.
They would have bestowed upon me a full $15 for my service.
Fuck you.
$15.
That's ridiculous.
$15. That's a third of minimum wage? How's that legal?
Yeah.
Sons of bitches. Conscripted. That's indentured servitude.
Awful.
It was pretty bad.
That's not a lot of money for your civic duty.
And then the heat coupled with the three tacos and at 1:30, 2 o'clock. Oh, I was struggling to stay awake.
Just sitting in a room. Don't fall asleep.
I was struggling. Good times. Thanks a lot, Orange County. Appreciate the memories.
Awful.
Yeah. So be forewarned. Anyway. What were we going to talk about?
David Fincher.
Here we go. Let's, you know what? Let me just go ahead and drop this in here and get the show started for real.
Welcome to the Quest Logo.
Damn straight. Crespo Diesel Film School. Class number 2, before we did Martin Scorsese. That was a fun episode, good times. Now here we go with David Fincher. And how are we going to start this one? How are we going to start this? Well, David Fincher started out like the way a lot of people start out. And not directly by making films, but he started first working on some crews. He got a job. You know how he got a job at ILM? You know how he pulled that one off?
How?
He was George Lucas's neighbor. Sometimes it's just location, 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 man.
That's awesome.
You know, sometimes it's just as easy as that if you're lucky, if you're ambitious.
Yeah.
They knew him.
It just so happened he lived next door.
So he got him some work, some production work on a little movie that they called Star Wars Episode 6. Return of the
Jedi.
How do you say that?
Jedi. I believe it's Jedi.
Okay. If you say so. And also, through ILM that same year, he also got a little bit of work on this. What's it? The Indiana Jones and the Temple of
Doom?
Perhaps?
Or is it Temple of Mood?
Or was it Raiders, actually? No, it might have been Raiders.
Anyway. Raiders of the Lost Crown?
Anyway, so that's how he... One of the ways he got started was by doing that. And then he... In 1984, that same year, he put out he got a job doing a commercial, directing a commercial. But not nice. Just any commercial. He got an American Cancer Society commercial.
Uh-huh.
I recommend going ahead, if you haven't seen it, you probably haven't because it's old. Go to YouTube, just search, this worked for me, David Fincher anti-smoking commercial. That worked.
Yeah.
And the very first one that pops up. It's
crazy.
It's a smoking fetus.
Yeah, it's a smoking fetus puppet.
So watch it.
It's a puppet. It's live. It's live action.
It's,
man.
It's a 30-second live action fetus puppet smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
But just check it out. It's David Fincher's pretty much his first commercial, and that got him. I mean, it was kind of controversial. It's kind of it's a crazy image to see that. You know, no one was ready for that shit in 1984. So that got him on the map. Segued that into making music videos.
Lots of them. Good lord.
Which I believe you have a list there.
Yes, I do.
Of his music videos. So let's start there. Talk about some of those before we get into his actual movies. So what's the list here?
I mean, he started in 84.
Yeah,
let's
run through them and then stop with the ones we recognize.
Dance This World Away by Rick Springfield.
Oh, a Rick Springfield.
A whole bunch of Rick Springfield, actually. Also, Celebrate Youth and Bop Till You Drop It, all in 84.
So there you go. Check out those.
1985, Shame and Shock by The Motels.
The Motels! Never heard of them.
And another Rick Springfield, Celebrate Youth.
Okay, so Rick Springfield was throwing him some work. That's really cool.
In 1986,
he
did two Outfield songs.
I don't know Outfield.
The guys who did Your Love.
Oh, okay, yes. Okay.
All the Love in the World and Every Time You Cry.
All the Love in the World?
I don't know. I've never heard any of these songs.
Interesting.
And then also One Simple Thing by The Stabilizers.
That's a cool name.
1987, he did two for Wire Train, She Comes On, and Should She Cry.
And what year is this?
87.
And then 87 is when, like, he just started working like crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, oh, good Lord, yeah, yeah. 1987, also, Endless Nights by Eddie Money, Downtown Train by Patti Smith.
Okay.
I Don't Mind at All, Bourgeoisie Tag, Notorious by Loverboy.
Loverboy. A lot of these are, like, huge acts at this time.
Love Will Rise Again by Loverboy, Johnny B by The Hooters, Storybook Story by Mark Knopfler.
Mm-hmm.
Can I Hold You, Colin Hay, and No Surrender, The Outfield, also Say You Will by Foreigner, and Don't Tell Me the Time by The Motels.
Goddamn.
That was all in 87.
That's a lot of goddamn work in 87.
88 as well. What do we got here?
I think that's when Madonna starts coming in, I believe.
Tell It to the Moon by The Motels, Heart of Gold by Johnny Hates Jazz, Englishman in New York by Sting, Shattered Dreams by Johnny Hates Jazz, Get Rhythm by Ray Cooter, Most of All, Jody Wiley, Roll With It, Steve Winwood. It's Just the Way You Love Me by Paula Abdul. Another error, Steve Winwood, Holding On. 1989, still working like crazy.
Yeah.
We got Heart by Nina Cherry, Bambolio by the Gypsy Kings.
No, that's Bambolio.
Yeah.
Bambolio. Yeah. That's hard though.
Yep. Straight Up by Paula Abdul. That one I know.
Okay. Finally, one that Drew knows.
I've seen that music video.
Mm-hmm.
Most of All by Jody Watley and Real Love.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Bambaleo, the third version by Gypsy Kings.
That's Bambaleo. That's how you say that one.
A Roy Orbison track, She's a Mystery to Me.
Mm-hmm.
Another Paula Abdul, Forever Your Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And Express Yourself by Madonna.
He
won an MTV Music Video Award for that.
Yes, and also it was voted number one in Slant Magazine's Top 100 Videos.
That was in
2003.
End of the Innocence by Don Henley. Cold Hearted.
Hell yeah, actually that Don Henley song was a Grammy winner, I believe.
Yeah.
So when they played the song at the Grammys and they played a clip, they played a little bit of David Fincher for the people.
Oh, Father by Madonna, and Janie's Got a Gun by Aerosmith.
Janie's
I'm
got
pretty
a
sure
gun.
Everybody's seen that video.
And if you go back and you watch it, it's like, of course it's David Fincher, because it's all like super dark. You can't see people's faces.
Yep.
There's the flashlight beam shining through the darkness. It's all the tropes are there. You know,
Vogue by Madonna. I'm sure everybody's seen that.
Vogue,
at least everybody our age.
On that Slant Magazine list where Express Yourself was number one.
Yeah,
Vogue was number four.
Cradle of Love by Billy Idol. And L.A. Woman by Billy Idol.
Oh, yeah, a little Billy Idol in there.
Freedom 90 by George Michael. Those were all in 1990. 92, Who Is It by Michael Jackson.
Actually, real quick, 1990 MTV Music Video Awards. Three of the four Best Direction in a Video nominees.
Were him.
End of Innocence, Janie's Got a Gun, and Vogue. Winner was?
I don't know.
Say yes.
Janie's Got a Gun.
Vogue.
Bad Girl by Madonna.
Bad Girl.
Love Is Strong by the Rolling Stones in 94. Oh, that Wallflowers.
94, yeah, that one, that Love Is Strong video. Yeah. That's one where the Rolling Stones are like super giant and they're walking around, I think it's New York City, while they're playing, and it totally straight up looks like Levi jeans commercial.
Yeah, it does.
Because the whole time, too, when I was doing these videos, he's also doing TV commercials for a whole assortment of very popular brands.
Yeah. Sixth Avenue Heartache by the Wallflowers.
Oh, Wallflowers. Mm-hmm.
Judith by Perfect Circle in 2000.
Okay, and this is where the work slows down considerably in terms of music videos.
And then in
now
2005,
like,
he did Only by Nine Inch Nails.
That's the weird one. That's the one where the camera just rotates around a desk.
No.
And then it's that, what do you call that thing where you stick your face in it and it's got the metal things? And then it leaves the impression where you put your hand in there.
I forget what it's called, but yeah, those pins.
Yeah. And it was...
Spencer's or something.
Exactly, yeah. And it's sitting on a desk, and then, like, Trent Reznor's face is singing the song about it.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And then I guess in 2013, he did Suit and Tie by Justin Timberlake and Jay-Z.
Oh, yeah.
So.
There you go. See, now that's the thing. Now if you want a David Fincher video, you got to be someone like a goddamn... You got to be his friend, like Trent Reznor, or you got to be a mega-rich superstar like Jay-Z and...
Justin Timberlake.
And Justin Timberlake. And actually, they had a relationship there because they worked on the Timberlake and Fincher worked on Social Network.
Yeah.
So that's probably how that one happened. So, yeah, so you got to be his friend. You got to know him personally for him to make a music video for you now. So, yeah, he killed it music video-wise. That's what got him his first feature-length motion picture gig for 20th Century Fox. And it is by far, to put it kindly, not his best.
Correct.
But for reasons that we're going to talk about, I don't know how to say this.
Alien 3. Or is it Alien Cube?
Ah, what is it, Drew, now? What is it? I mean, it's the 3 is all the way up in the top there.
Exactly. Like what I'm saying. And on the IMDb list, it's super,
they even made
super
sure
script.
To do it. Yeah. Is that what it's called? Superscript.
Superscript.
Up and away.
Yeah. Alien Cubed, I guess.
Alien Cubed. The follow-up to the hugely popular Alien and Aliens. James Cameron's Aliens.
Yeah.
And, not well received.
Well, it wasn't very good. But.
Because it wasn't very good. But why?
Probably because I was looking for Alien or Alien 2, and this was
something totally different.
It's David Fincher.
Yeah, and Alien and Aliens are both very different movies.
Yeah.
And Fincher was like, well, I want my Alien movie to be very different as well.
And it was. And it wasn't what I was looking for.
It wasn't what people were expecting.
Yeah.
The movie did start with the characters that survived in Aliens that struggled so hard to live. The movie started with those characters dead immediately.
Yep.
And people hated that. That was a miscalculation, to be sure. But he wanted to, you know, really break away from that shit and really set his Alien movie apart, for better or worse.
He totally did.
But it's not like the whole movie being bad is his fault, because it's not his fault. He had massive problems with Fox.
Sure he did. He was first-time director.
First time.
Probably getting strong-armed.
First-time director with a... Oh, shit. Here we go. Crespo D's film school. Spar now. Because why not? I mean, I wasn't going to make a whole new bed music without the cue in there. So I was figuring, I'll try to make this fun. Try to make this fun for everyone. Here we go. Good times. This will be a quick one. We're going to do a Which Made More game. Mm-hmm. Opening weekend edition.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're going to go through all 9 of his movies real quick.
Okay.
And I'm also going to give you another movie that opened in that same weekend, or in one case, the following weekend.
Okay.
And you tell me which one had a bigger opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so number one. And we're going in order, so this works. Coming out in May of 1992, which made more opening weekend, Alien 3 or Encino Man?
Oh, man. Maybe Alien 3?
Alien 3 opened to $19.4 million. Encino Man, $9.8 million. So, yes.
Okay.
Yes, it did. Here we go. Number 2, coming out in September 1995, which made more opening weekend, 7 or Showgirls? That's a hell of an opening weekend.
I'm going to go with Showgirls.
7 made $13.9 million. Showgirls, $8.1 million.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I figured more people would have wanted to see titties.
A little more scintillating, right? Yeah. Didn't equate to box office. No. Number 3, which made more opening weekend in September 1997? The Game, or coming out the very next weekend, In and Out?
The Game, I hope.
The Game made $14.3 million. In and Out, $15 million.
Oh.
Yeah, you would hope. You can't go by hope. You got to go by the fact that In and Out
so
had
awesome.
David Klein in it, though, right? Kevin Klein. David Klein. Who's David Klein? Number 4, which made more in October of 1999, opening weekend, Fight Club or The Story of Us?
The Story of Us.
Do you remember that one? No,
but I know Fight Club bombed.
Fight Club opened to $11 million. The Story of Us, $9.6 million.
Oh.
Was even bombier, because that one had Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer.
The Fiefs.
Number 5, March 2002, which had the bigger opening weekend, Panic Room or Death to Smoochie?
Panic Room.
$30 million opening weekend. Death to Smoochie, $4.2 million. So there you go. You got two right so far. Four more to go. Which made more in March of 2007? Zodiac or Wild Hogs?
Zodiac.
Zodiac, $13.3 million. Wild Hogs, $39.6 million. You can't deny the box office power of combining Travolta, Tim Allen, Martin Lawrence,
and William H. Macy, old.
And put them all on motorcycles. December 2008, which had the better opening weekend? The Curious Case of Benjamin Button or Adam Sandler's Bedtime Stories?
Curious Case.
Curious Case had a $26.8 million opening. Bedtime Stories, $27.4. Very close.
Ridiculous.
Very close, but very wrong.
All these movies are so awful.
They are awful.
And all of his are so good.
Which had a bigger opening weekend? In October 2010, The Social Network or Let Me In?
Social Network.
Social Network, $22 million. Let Me In, $5 million. You got that. And finally, number one, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. This is December 2011. Or We Bought a Zoo. Hey, that rhymes.
The Girl with the Tattoo.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo opened at $12.7 million. We Bought a Zoo, $9.3. One, two, three, four out of nine. There
pretty
you
awful.
Go. There you go. I'm going to take a drink there. It's okay. Don't be upset.
Oh, I'm not. Don't worry.
Okay, so, Alien 3. What happened with Fox was that they interfered very much throughout the movie. There was this whole religious subplot that got cut out.
Sweet.
That was written and filmed and everything. And then Fox was like, this 15-20 minutes has to go. And then when you take out a whole chunk of movie like that and then just splice them together, things aren't going to fit together exactly right anymore, you know?
Uh-huh.
I have here a pretty good quote from Fincher, so we can just hear it from the guy himself. He says, there were a lot of enormously talented people working on that movie. It's just a movie starts from a unified concept. And once you unify the concept, it becomes very easy to see the things you're not going to spend money on. And if a movie is constantly in flux because you're having to please this vice president or that vice president of production, I think a movie sets a fascist dictatorship. You have to go in and know what it is you want to do because you have to tell 90 people what it is you want to do. And it has to be convincing. Otherwise, when they start to question it, the horse can easily run away with you, and it's bigger than you are. So that's more like you had to make this movie and be like totally in control of the situation and having to constantly answer to, you know, suit and ties and higher ups and shit. It's kind of undermining them, you know?
Yeah, well, totally. That's what happens when you mix business with art.
Yes. The intersection of art and commerce is an ugly place. It's a place full of Coca-Cola commercials and Gap khakis. So he says, going on here. So as we were shooting, a lot of people, I suppose, in an effort to make it, quote, better or more commercial or more like the other ones, like as opposed to the one that you liked, took to being extremely helpful so that this could be more James Cameron than James Cameron. Of course, you're sitting there going, guys, remember, I don't have any guns. I don't have any tripod guns or flamethrowers or any of that shit. If a movie gets off on the wrong foot, when you've never done it before, you assume everyone is going to be there to help you right the ship, but really you're beholden to a lot of banana republics.
Ugh.
That's pretty fun. I worked on it for 2 years, got fired off it 3 times.
Ouch.
And I had to fight for every single thing. No one hated Alien 3 more than me. To this day, no one hates it more than me. It was a baptism by fire. I was very naive. For a number of years, I've been around the kind of people who finance movies and the kind of people who are there to make the deals for movies, but I've always had this naive idea that everybody wants to make movies as good as they can be, which is stupid. I thought, well, surely you don't want to have the 20th Century Fox logo over a shitty movie, and they were like, well, as long as it opens. They didn't care.
Nice.
So basically, Fox wanted
give they, us. They just wanted a movie.
Give us an a shoot 'em up commercial, you know, alien movie, just like the last one that made a ton of money. And he's like, well, I want to make this crazy dark alien movie that's actually set on a prison planet and doesn't have any machine guns or space marines or shit. And they're like,
no,
no, we this has to make money somehow. And it kind of did, but not as much as the other ones. But then, hey, you know what? They tried again with Alien 4. Gave that one to a crazy Frenchman.
Yeah.
And, oof, that was...
just as bad. Well, probably worse.
Less spoken about that one, the better. So, yeah, there's this whole alien subplot. Not alien. The whole religious subplot that they cut out. There's actually a, quote, director's cut of Alien 3 that, ironically, Fox put together... when they put out the Alien movies out on DVD as a box set, I think at least the first three all had director's cuts. But the third one, it's actually funny. The first director's cut, the Ridley Scott one, he was like, Fox asked for a director's cut. I really didn't have one. So I recut the movie. I put in this one scene that was deleted. I put it back in. But to make that work, I had to take something else out. So now my director's cut is actually a minute shorter than the theatrical cut.
Nice.
So and this is this whole note from him in the DVD explaining that. And then for the David Fincher one, they put together with... deleted scenes and like whatever they had laying around from that time, they put together their own director's cut without him and without his supervision.
Sounds awful.
You know, it's actually interesting to watch it because it gives you a better idea of where Fincher was trying to go with it and what they did cut out and how things made more sense. But at the end of the day, it's still not that great of a movie. But hey, you righted that shit pretty quick. Because what did you follow that up with?
What's in the box, Chris?
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
I followed up with 7 in 1995.
Did I say that's isn't it 7N? Everywhere I see that it's 7N.
I know, it's 7.
Are you sure?
Yes.
7N? I've only seen it written. I've never heard anyone say it out loud, actually. Yeah. So.
7,
which had the... I remember seeing that for the first time, and the opening credit sequence was set to a remix of a Nine Inch Nails song.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man. Because I was like, that age, that time period music, yep. I was listening to, that was right up my alley. I was like, this guy's awesome.
And then the movie came out, and you watched it, and you were like, oh, my God.
I watched that movie with my dad.
Yeah, so did I.
And I was young.
So was I.
So you were, yeah. A little awkward at times.
It was awesome.
A little awkward at times when they break out the giant knife dildo, sword dildo.
Yeah, I didn't really know what that was, so I just didn't pay attention.
Right, fair enough. Fair enough.
What really?
It's pretty gnarly, dude.
Oh man, yeah. It was a crazy ass fucking movie.
It is a crazy movie, written by Andrew Kevin Walker, who him and Fincher ended up working together quite a bit after that, and. Walker at least gets like passes at his screenplays and helps him out, which at the very least, if it doesn't straight up write the screenplay for the movie.
I mean, hell, it's where he met Brad Pitt and he did a bunch of work with him, too.
They actually became close friends making that movie. And so, yeah, they ended up making 3 movies together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fruitful relationship there between the two of them.
And God.
And God?
God's in 7. He plays a detective.
Oh, God, the voice of the cosmos, but not cosmos, across the universe.
Yes, because he's God.
Morgan Freeman.
It's his voice.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great cast. Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
You know.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Gwyneth, before she got annoying.
Her head's in a box.
At the end, so people can appreciate that now.
Mm-hmm.
Never really actually see that.
No, but you know. But
you know it's
there.
Head. Yeah, you know
it's there.
Came out in 1995. And it was just... 7 is a very influential movie. I mean, it changed the way movies were made from that point on. I mean, you can see immediately, even things like Steven Seagal movies, it affected, like The Glimmer Man.
Yeah.
Right? That was made post-7. And you can tell they're tracking a serial killer called The Family Man. You know, even the opening credits, it's like it sets a really bad industrial music, and it's all like intercutting close-ups of like... newspaper stuff, and you know, just aping the opening credit sequence of 7.
Yeah.
A lot of movies straight up just did that. They're just like, it's just copy the opening credits. Other movies, in Glimmer Man too, how it's raining the entire time, because like in 7 it's always raining.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, that's how you make things gritty and dark. It's raining all the time. Ooh, you know, it's fucking, it's amazing how that one movie could like really change the landscape of the way Hollywood thrillers were made for a few years. And now so many people just get it so horribly wrong. Again, Glimmerman, just get it so bad, so horribly, horribly wrong. It takes a certain deft touch. And Fincher's got it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Even on the second movie, he shows a lot of control. He's establishing that super dark look, you know, the very underlit sets. And he's even worked it into his Facebook movie, a shot of, like, people with flashlights.
Doing something.
The beam going through the darkness, cutting through it. He does that so often. It's a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
Really. That's really what it is. Seven's a disturbing movie, man.
It's awesome. I love it. Come on. When you got a serial killer taking the seven deadly sins, literally, it makes for a fun movie.
It does feel also, again, because it was almost 20 years ago now. It was almost 20 years ago now. So many movies have been made that have been, that at that time, I was like, whoa, this is dark. And now that's kind of on TV.
Yeah. Darker.
Things are getting darker. But I think could someone like a younger person, like a 20-year-old, someone who was born after Seven came out, would they watch that movie and be like, "Oh shit, this movie's crazy," or would they just be like, "Oh, this is like what's on HBO"?
They've already been subjected to worse, far worse.
Yeah, but it's not just that it's graphic or intense stuff, because it's like pre-Saw, but just the way it's shot and the music and the claustrophobia in some scenes and just the constant sense of dread and doom.
Darkness.
It only lightens up for like a minute when they're like shaving their chests in the bathroom and they're like, they make a joke about shaving off a nipple and getting workman's comp. Like, that's the kind of humor they got going on in this movie. And otherwise, there's a scene where when they're chasing John Doe before he knows Kevin Spacey, and Brad Pitt's chasing him, and they get through the alley, and of course it's raining, so everyone's wet. And he, like, falls on top of a truck or slips or something.
Yeah.
He actually breaks his arm. Brad Pitt, for real.
Oh, really? He actually broke his arm? Yeah. That wasn't, like... Because in the next scene after that, his arm is in a sling.
His thing's in a sling. Yeah. He totally broke his arm on the set. And the thing is, they had scenes to shoot still that were going to take place before that event happened in the movie. It's not like the movie's shot in chronological order, right? Mm-hmm. So there are some scenes where, he has... There, it's like right after the fall, and then there's some where he had to have like a kind of a flesh colored glove,
sweet,
because he had one of those casts where the fingers were sticking through, so he had like a glove thing over the white part, and he was trying, had it kind of tucked into his jacket, and he was trying to hide it with his body and stuff. You can see in a couple scenes where it's pretty funny,
awesome.
It's like, oh yeah, he hurt him so hard,
they made it work,
but they did, they made it work, and then they worked it into the screenplay. He even said over the phone something about breaking his arm.
Yeah.
Pretty funny. So, Gwyneth Paltrow's head's in a box.
Yep.
Spoiler alert. And it's fucking Seven, man.
It is.
It's awesome.
If you haven't seen it, definitely recommend watching it as soon as possible.
If you haven't seen it, what are you doing with your life? Obviously living it. Good job. This quote is good for this part right here. David Fincher said, "I don't know how much movies should entertain. To me, I'm always interested in movies that scar. The thing I love about Jaws is the fact that I've never gone swimming in the ocean again."
Nice.
So,
Seven definitely probably scarred some people.
So make no mistake, he's trying to scar some people. He turned down... Actually, I'll say that one. Yeah, I'll say that one. Go ahead.
All right, 1997.
1997.
The Game.
Oh my goodness.
Michael Douglas, Sean Penn.
Spoiler alert, it was a game the whole time.
Oh, man.
The whole thing is a game.
That movie is so fucking great.
It's a crazy movie.
Even at this point in time, I've seen it like 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 times.
Yeah.
And every time I watch it, I still just watch. Like, if it comes on, I'm going to watch it.
You're going to watch it. That's
it. If I walk in on somebody watching the game, I'm going
to
finish it.
That guy does have... There's that quote, though, at one point where they're talking to him. He talks to the two guys who are like, "Oh, yeah, we did the game. I did the game in Philly. I did the game, whatever." And one guy says, "Man, I wish I could go back and do it again for the first time."
Oh, dude, same thing. I wish I could watch that movie again for the first time.
Yeah. Right?
If you haven't seen The Game, you should watch that one, too.
You should, although I don't know how you haven't. It's on TV all the time.
Seriously.
It is on TV all the
time. It is.
So it's Michael Douglas, Sean Penn, both just kicking ass.
And taking names.
Michael Douglas is actually fantastic.
He is really good in that movie.
He's really good.
And then again, of course, it's Fincher, so everything's at night.
And dark.
Everything's dark, even when it's...
creepy.
If it's not dark, then it's in like a super dusty, dirty Mexico when he wakes up in the...
that creepy-ass fucking clown at the beginning.
Yes, yes, yes. That he drags
that
inside.
That so creepy.
Or when he's talking to the man in the TV.
Yeah, and that's a lot of fun.
And it gives him a little bit of a Max Headroom type thing. Yep. Where he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Kind of dubsteppy. Just realized that. Max Headroom was the original dubstepper.
Yes.
If you don't know who Max Headroom is, then you are very young. And we appreciate you listening to the show. Thank you very much. Yeah, the game, man. I mean, it's just like, come on. Now, it's not like the game is a profound movie. It's not that deep. It's a movie about daddy issues.
It's
a man learning to live again and being initiated into
it's
a
just
secret
fun.
Society.
And there's, I mean, this was in a time before, you know, massive plot twists.
Yes.
And there, whoa.
This was pre-Sixth Sense.
Yeah. So, whoa. I mean, if you haven't seen the movie, I kind of don't want to ruin it for you, unless we already did.
I think
we already did, but
maybe we did it.
The twist.
Because if you haven't seen the movie,
so good.
If you haven't seen the movie, then when you hear things like, oh, the clown in the beginning and the guy talking through the TV, it's like, none of that shit makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. Watch the damn movie.
It's crazy. The twist at the end. I mean, it gets you.
It gets you. It's like, oh, I didn't see that one coming.
No.
Maybe you should have, but you didn't. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. This is what I was saving. Because that was 97?
Yes.
In 1999, he turned down the offer to direct 8mm.
Oh, is it because he directed Fight Club instead?
Yes. That is correct.
Yeah. Talking about another crazy plot twist.
The year of The Sixth Sense. I think that was 99 was the same year. 99 was a crazy year for movies. That's some really good shit that came out in 99. And also Star Wars Episode 1. On Fight Club. This is an interesting quote. We open at the Venice Film Festival. And I think to say they hated it would be an understatement. Let's put it this way. The youngest person in the screening was Giorgio Armani.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's not a movie for old people.
They called for our hides and we split town. We thought it was funny. Actually, Helena Bonham Carter's mother was three seats down from me and she was just laughing and laughing. She was the only one. She's cool. I'm always surprised at how seriously people take movies. It always surprises me what people get their bowels in an uproar about. It's a movie. It was interesting to me, the critics who felt they had a moral obligation to the, quote, broader audience to warn them. But it didn't surprise me that some people didn't think it was funny. It didn't surprise me that some people thought it was morbid. It surprised me the people who went out of their way to save other people from this experience. I thought that was kind of silly. And that's true.
Agreed.
He might be talking... He's talking about the critics in general, but I'm sure the whole time he was thinking of one person in particular.
No.
Oprah Winfrey. She went on her show, for whatever reason, felt the need to warn people from seeing this movie that she just saw as only violent. She felt it had no redeeming value whatsoever, no artistic value, and it was just about violence and fighting.
Well,
and was like, people don't go see this movie.
It's totally... If more people have seen the movie, they would have realized exactly what the movie was about, and that would affect her bottom line 100%. And I'm pretty sure that's what Fincher was trying to do anyway. You know, just let people know, you know, that get out of the daily grind, man.
It's if they got out of the daily grind, they would stop watching her show. Which was on at that time every day at 4:00.
Exactly.
She needs a grind.
Exactly that, and that's why she was against the movie.
And also,
because Oprah's not stupid. It's not like she saw the movie and only saw it for the fighting. She saw the
anti-materialism message,
and that's what she was trying to fight.
Meanwhile, her new network, the Oprah Winfrey Network, just happens to have the acronym OWN.
Yeah.
You know, she's agreed. All about you have a car and you have a car
and I own you.
Materialism. It's all materialism. Yeah. There really is. I'm not saying she's a 100% awful, horrible person. She's done a lot of good here and
I'm
there.
I'm sure she has.
Know, but, you know, the book club thing is cool. She encourages people to be reading, although she's also dictating what should be read.
Exactly.
But shit like that is bullshit.
But, I mean, and Fight Club is completely against all of that, so.
The Fox exec who greenlit Fight Club? Fired.
Of course.
Yep.
Although he should be, I mean, in retrospect, he should be rehired because it became a cultural phenomenon.
Now he should be rehired and made the head of the studio. Because, yes, you're absolutely right. It's pretty quickly, once it hit DVD, because this was right around 99, 2000. I think, yeah, DVD came out in 2000. That was like the real birth. I mean, DVDs have been out for a few years, but that was when, like, they really, the industry really started, they saw it as the cash cow that it could be, and they started putting money into the DVDs and trying to get, you know, their return out of it, which worked great for them.
Did you see Fight Club in theaters?
I did. I saw Fight Club in theaters. My cousin, shout out to my cousin, took me to go see it. He was in town. He was like, have you seen this movie? I was like, no. He's like, we're going tonight. And it was on a Sunday night. We saw the final showing of the day. When I walked out of the theater at like 11:30 at night, I was like, I wanna watch it again. I wanna turn around and see it again. And if I could, I would. But there are literally no more fucking showings. Couldn't see it the next day because I had school. It was like the end of high school for me. I was like, all right. I told people about it at school. I was like, we got to go see this. Like this weekend, we got to go see this. I got a couple friends to go. Friday rolls around, yanked. From all the theaters, we had to go. It was playing like two theaters in Manhattan. I had to take a train to a ferry to another train to go see this fucking movie. But I did see it twice.
Nice
in the theaters. And then freshman year, UCF. Right after that, they used to do in the big hall auditorium, whatever, free movies all the time. One of them was they showed Fight Club.
I'm sure.
So it was like a whole bunch of us went. So, but by that time, I had that shit on DVD, and they had put out a crazy 2-disc DVD with all these insane special features and stuff, and tons of commentary. It was like the most loaded DVD of it at the time. And man, I watched the shit out of that over and over. I actually remember that's actually the first two DVDs I got. The first DVD I got was Fight Club, and then the second one was Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Another stacked DVD. It was like two DVDs, tons of features, including this whole thing about a scene from Monty Python being recreated in Legos or something like that.
So good.
It's fantastic. Fantastic film. Fight Club. I mean, based on the book by Chuck Palahniuk, which is, it's a great book. I recommend reading it too. You know, it's interesting reading it from the perspective of Jack as opposed to seeing the movie, which is more subjective. You're watching the story in the book. You're in the head of the protagonist, right? Yeah. It totally bombed opening weekend. Came out on DVD. People loved it, flipped out for it, shared it.
Cultural phenomenon.
Huge. Cultural touchstone for sure. Where were you when you finally got around to Fight Club and realized it was amazing?
I saw it in theaters.
There you go. You saw it in theaters. Because you were cool.
John Phillips was working at the movie theater, so I got in for free.
Ah, so that's part of the reason why.
And Maddie J walked out halfway through it to go hang out with some girl.
Friend of the show, Maddie J. Getting a BJ. They're in the FC in 99. Good friend.
Then in 2002, he did Panic Room.
Panic Room, David Fincher says, is a movie as opposed to a film.
Correct.
A movie is made for an audience, and a film is made for both the audience and the filmmakers. I think that The Game is a movie, and Fight Club is a film. I think that Fight Club is more than the sum of its parts, whereas Panic Room is the sum of its parts. I didn't look at Panic Room and think, wow, this is going to set the world on fire. These are footnote movies, guilty pleasure movies, thrillers, woman trapped in a house movies. They're not particularly important.
No, but it's good, and it's one of the better women trapped in a house movies.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's for being a mainstream thriller that's just about tension and, you know.
It's really dark.
It's very well made.
Fincher.
You might remember there's a scene where, like, they're in the panic room, and, like, their cell phone's not working. They're trying to get someone's attention.
Yeah.
And they're, like, flashing a light, and it's going across the street, and some, like, fat dude, he wakes up, and he wanders to the window, and he, like, looks across. Then he closes the window and goes back to bed. That's Andrew Kevin Walker, the screenwriter.
Nice.
Andrew Kevin Walker. Is that what I said?
Yes.
Anyway, little cameo there for him. You barely see his face. And you know what? I remember when I saw the movie thinking, this is more, I always refer to it as, in my own head, as an exercise movie. Because I feel like he made this just so he could, like, try out a couple things, work on, like, building tension, play with his digital camera toys. You know, it felt like he was more making the movie for the sake of making the movie, as opposed to, you know, like, here's a great story that I think everyone's gonna like.
Yeah.
You know who plays that that androgynous child of Jodie Foster in that movie?
No, who was it?
That's old stink-faced Kristen Stewart.
Really?
Twilighty Kristen Stewart.
Really?
Yeah.
It was androgynous. I thought it was a boy.
Yeah. Very confusing.
No, that's kind of creepy.
And now she has perma stink face.
Yep.
So, yeah, Panic Room is a great movie. It's really good, but it's not like, like you said, not going to set the world on fire.
Nope. 2007, followed that up with Zodiac.
He was originally going to direct The Black Dahlia in 2006.
Whatever, the one Zodiac's
that,
a better
the
one.
The one that Brian De Palma ended up making with Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah, that was awful.
Yeah, Zodiac is much...
Once again, another one of those movies where it's very Law and Order-y.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's on, no matter where it is in the story, I'll sit down and finish it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He also was set at that time to direct Mission Impossible 3.
Zodiac. Whatever. Zodiac.
They ended up doing Zodiac. Which Zodiac's my favorite Fincher movie. That's, for me, that's the one. It's that, and then it would be Fight Club.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to reverse those. I mean, I love me some Zodiac.
You'll go Fight Club and then Zodiac?
Fight Club, yeah.
That's fine.
Definitely.
Okay. All right. Okay. Fair enough. So Zodiac, 2.5 hour
so awesome.
Procedural epic.
That's why I love it.
About
love
the Zodiac Killer and how it was never caught.
It's Law and Order, 1970-something.
Yes, and with an open ending.
Yes.
They never caught the Zodiac Killer. Spoiler, history spoiler, never caught the Zodiac Killer, and he doesn't pull a Tarantino and change history.
No, but he does make some...
Does make the, but he does go with some assumptions, yeah.
He
picks a Zodiac.
He, as far as I'm concerned, that guy was the Zodiac.
Might as well have been.
Yeah.
But the DNA evidence on the envelope, faulty envelope. I don't know. Who knows? Fantastic movie. The shame about it is not only did it make such little dough, it only made $30 million total.
Nice.
As a matter of fact, whatever. What was it? Yeah, I crumpled this up. Zodiac opening weekend, $11 million, $13 million. Wild Hogs had an opening of $39 million.
That made more than
Zodiac's entire run.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see Zodiac in theaters, so.
Oh, see, part of the problem, man. I saw that shit in theaters, and ugh, wish I could see it again in the theater on a big screen, because it's definitely a great big screen movie. Yeah. Also, his first movie shot on digital with digital cameras. There's a couple of shots here and there where you film high-speed cameras.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was all digital. And it looks great.
It does.
It looks great.
It's awesome.
He's one of the pioneers of making a feature-length film on digital, but still making it look gorgeous. All right. Oh, I did want to point this out. I forgot about this. He worked for a production company called Propaganda Films.
Mm-hmm.
Other people that worked in this company, you know, that they got their start while making music videos and stuff. Michael Bay, Antoine Fuqua, guy did Training Day, and House of Eli. Michel Gondry, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Okay.
Spike Jones.
Nice.
Alex Proyas, the guy who did Dark City and The Crow. Mark Romanek, the amazing music video director who just put out he just did the latest Taylor Swift video. And you know, no one here likes Taylor Swift. I mean, maybe some of your guys' girlfriends, which, whatever. But the video, though, check it out.
Yeah.
It's a Mark Romanek. It's a Mark Romanek original. Gore Verbinski, fellow behind a Ring remake and the Pirates movies. And Zack Snyder.
Ha.
So all these guys work with the same production company. Yeah, pretty good place to work. So, hey, if you want to get
and
your
they're
start...
They're all slightly dark, too.
They're all a little bent, all of them, in different ways. Absolutely. Propaganda Films. Pretty cool place. Pretty cool place. Speaking of, studios and stuff, David Fincher once said, people always ask why I don't make independent movies. I do make independent movies. I just make them at Sony and Paramount.
Pretty much.
Well, it's true. He's found a way to get some subversive shit through the system.
Yeah, with some pretty big name actors.
And it only backfired on him with Alien 3, his first time out. After that, I mean, it's been a dark, wild ride. And Zodiac, man, for me, it's like I do like the movie since then. Obviously, we're about to talk about them, but Zodiac is, for me, it's it.
That's the one.
Oh, God. Makes me want to watch it right now.
He followed that up in 2008 with The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
The Curious Case of Benjamin Buttons.
Benjamin's Button.
I think his first PG-13 movie. Alien game.
Yeah, all those are R.
So that's his first and I think only PG-13 movie thus far.
And the last one he did with Mr. Pitt.
Last one he did with Mr. Pitt, his third movie. Also written by, the screenplay was written by Joe Roth, who wrote Forrest Gump. So that's why there's kind of a, you know, if you more, it's that's a part of why it's his most sentimental movie.
No.
You know? Because most of his movies don't have
any sentiment whatsoever.
Yeah, pretty much none. They're pretty dark, cynical movies. Mm-hmm. But
which is why I like them so much.
Curious Kids, Benjamin Button is much more more about life and love, and because he had to get, he had to go through all that stuff.
And being,
so at the end, you can get to the regret and the sadness. And the,
being,
you know,
born old and wrinkly and die as a tiny little baby.
But with dementia.
Does he keep going back? Does he like turn into a fetus? Does he go all the way?
Would the sperm jump out of the egg?
That's what I'm saying. Then hit the floor.
How far does it?
And then,
but that, you know, because that means then he would have started as dust and bones inside a pregnant lady.
And then somehow reformed himself.
Rehydrated like space food.
Gross.
Astronaut food. Yeah, this got disgusting really quick. I like it. It's a very good movie, but again, it's
not,
a little,
not my favorite.
It's a little overly sentimental at times.
Yeah, I think he's just trying to make up for it for all the, you know, supremely dark nonsense that he normally makes.
It's possible. It's possible. And I remember seeing it the same. That came out the same week that I got to see Che in theaters, parts 1 and 2. And Che ends on a bit of a downer, like an upper downer. It's like it's about, you know, having faith in humanity and stuff, but it's also about Che dying. And, you know, getting shot by the Bolivians. And it's like, oh, man, it's a downer. And then Curious Case of Benjamin Button, I saw that like 2 days later. And that one has the same ending where it's like, oh, they're reunited and, you know, love conquers all. But also everyone's dying and it's really sad. And it's just, it's just brutal. Just going over some quotes here. Fincher once said, as a director, films about how you dole out the information so that the audience stays with you when they're supposed to stay with you, behind you when they're supposed to stay behind you, and ahead of you when they're supposed to stay ahead of you. He knows exactly how to make these movies, what scenes go where. I mean, that's why his movies work. He knows how to build them. He knows how to bring the audience along and just let you know, just see exactly what you need to see. And that's why his twist movies work. That's why they work. Because he knows exactly what he's doing. And after the courteous cuss, a bunch of mittens, what a...
2010, The Social Network. Definitely his most successful film.
Yeah, his most popular, his most successful. I remember when this movie got announced, and I was like, David Fincher is making a movie based on this book called The Accidental Millionaires,
and it's
about the start, and it's about the start of Facebook.
But it was so good. And I didn't think it was going to be anywhere near as interesting or as good as it was.
I remember thinking like, oh no, this sounds, make a movie about finding the serial killer or something. You know, like I don't want to. This sounds so boring. And then it ended up being so great. Screenplay by Aaron Sorkin. That shit won the Academy Award for most brilliant words put on paper for the year. Curious Case of Benjamin Button was his first Best Director nomination. And then he also got nominated for Best Director for Social Network. And he won Best Director for Social Network for the Golden Globe, which we've said on here, Golden Globes is bullshit, and BAFTA, which is the British version of the Academy. So yeah, you're right. It's his most popular, most successful film in terms of like boom. Like I mean, because even Fight Club wasn't received initially. That one bombed at first.
Initially,
commercially
movie,
and
were
critically.
Like, see that movie.
As a matter of fact, I read that Fight Club, to go back on that one, Entertainment Weekly, that bastion, those arbiters of art and culture, you know, fuck those guys. They rated Fight Club upon release. They gave a rating of D- because, you know, you have to rate art these days. And then, of course, subsequently put it on, like,
top 10 list
was,
or something.
It was like the top 100 DVDs to own or some crazy list. We're like, oh, this movie is great, blah, blah, blah. We jump on the bandwagon along with everyone else. Social Network is just like, I mean, that dropped like a bomb. Boom. I mean, people.
I mean, it's good.
It is. It's a fascinating movie. It's great acting.
Yeah.
The Eisenberg, the Timberlake, Rooney Mara cultivated that relationship.
Spider-Man.
The Spider-Man. Spider-Man himself, yeah. Andrew Garfield, the British-American gentleman playing a South American fellow. And being awesome. And being great.
Yeah, it was good.
Social Network score, Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross. Trent Reznor's first film score. Fincher was going to make, back in like 2000, after Fight Club, he was going to adapt Chuck Palahniuk's Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
But then that project got dropped because the plot prominently featured, actually the narrative device was the main character hijacked an airplane.
Yeah.
And then September 11th, 2001 happened, and then all of a sudden movies about hijackings and airplanes and stuff like that were kind of like no go for a while.
Mm-hmm.
If that movie ever got made, the score was going to be by Trent Reznor.
Nice.
It was, at that time, it would have been like a Nine Inch Nails score, I guess, because this one he did with Atticus Ross. But anyway, great score. That won the Academy Award for Best Soundtrack. And it's a great movie. And they built on the relationships in that movie to make his most recent one, his last one.
2011, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Tattoo! The American version, which is actually delighted in how, when that movie came out, looked online, and there were all these reviews because, you know, the original is based on a Swedish book, and it was the Swedes had already made a trilogy out of it before they even got to the American version of this movie.
Yeah.
And when Fincher's version came out, there were all these critics, Swedish critics, tons of them, almost all of them, came out and were like, yeah, this one's better.
Of course.
It's better than our version.
Yeah, yeah, well, it's Fincher.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because it's Fincher. It's so good. And he made that movie because he wanted to, his main goal, and he said this, was he wanted to make a really hard R adult movie. You know,
he did.
This movie is 100% not for the youth, not for kids. There's no gray area there.
There's ass rape.
It's a hard, hard fucking movie. It's a hard goddamn movie. And you know what? I wish I liked it more. I admire it.
I mean, it's
more
good
than I like it. It's not nothing to do with him. He made, I feel, the best movie that could be made with that story, with that source material. Because I saw the Swedish version, you know, whatever, when that came out. Because people were shitting themselves for that fucking movie and those books. And I saw that movie and I was like, not impressed.
Yeah.
I'm not impressed by it. It's okay, but it's not that good. I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably the best thing that ever came out of Sweden.
It might be. Maybe. No, man. Not when you got Ingmar Bergman and Max von Sydow and Dolph Lundgren. Got plenty of great things coming out of Sweden. Swedish Fish. They got tons of it. Swisher Sweets. No, that's Swedish. Swedish Sweets. It's the source material I don't like. I really don't like the story that much. So I think he made the best movie possible with that story. I'm not banging for him to make the next two. You know?
Yeah, no.
I'm ready for him to move on. Which
he has.
He's got a movie coming up.
October 3rd, Gone Girl, starring Batfleck.
The Batfleck. And that English chick, Rosamund Pike.
Yeah,
I think that's her name. And that's an adaptation of a book. So on the surface, you know, it's a story about a guy who his wife goes missing and then he's like the main suspect or whatever.
Yep.
And on the surface, it seems like a kind of Lifetime movie-ish.
A little bit.
You know, like what separates this from an episode of, like you mentioned earlier, Law and Order? What separates that from Law and Order?
Maybe it's going to be all Zodiac-y. And it's got Batfleck in it.
That's the thing. I'm really just trying to trust in David Fincher's instinct. He obviously read the book or he read the story or whatever, and he saw something in there that he latched onto, something that he could really work and exploit, and hopefully make something that's set to scar people as opposed to entertain them.
I can't wait.
So we'll find out October. Looking forward to that for sure. So yeah.
And he also directed the first two episodes of House of Cards.
That's right. Where if you watch shows, it's kind of movie-ish because it's like 2 hours of House of Cards. High production quality. It looks great. Nice and clean shot. Kevin Spacey's great in it, bringing back that Seven connection. So yeah, there you go. David Fincher. He turned down the offer to direct Batman Begins.
That's okay. Christopher Nolan did a great job.
Yeah, he did. But he's like, you know what?
I understand why, though, because, you know, it would have been a darker Batman.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I think it must have been
a rainier Batman.
It must have been after he turned it down, because at one point, Darren Aronofsky was working on Batman Begins, and he was doing straight up Batman Year One, Frank Miller style. No. And he actually had Frank Miller come in, and he wrote the screenplay with him.
Nice.
And they wrote a hard R Batman origin story. That was absolutely insane.
I want to see it. I love Aronofsky. That's another. We should do a film school on him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Aronofsky will be a future subject because he's another one that, if you're really into film, into movies, he's another one you got to get into. But, you know, David Fincher, only 9 movies. I think a lot of the people that are listening have seen most of them. It should be easy for you to track down some of these movies. That's a hell of a run of movies.
Hell yeah.
That's a hell of a run. So how would we... Let's rank them. Because you said... You would still go Fight Club number 1?
Yeah, Fight Club number 1.
And then Zodiac number 2?
Yeah, Zodiac number 2.
Okay, so yeah, I would go Zodiac number 1. And then Fight Club number 2. What would be your next one? What would be your...
7.
7's a good one.
Yeah.
I could definitely tell you... I can even go...
Would it be easier to go backwards?
Because I can tell you my 11 is going to be Alien 3. Mm-hmm. And then my 10 is going to be Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, that's about right.
You go with that? Wait, no. You only did 9 movies. I don't have 11.
I've got Fight Club, Zodiac,
7.
And then actually it's going to be The Game, then 7.
Okay. See, that's a little more what I was thinking, actually.
And then The Social Network.
Which then leaves The Social.
No.
The Networks. So you go Fight Club, Zodiac, The Game, 7, Social Network, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Alien 3.
Correct.
I would go Zodiac, Fight Club. The rest will be the same. The Game, 7, Social Network, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, there you go.
All right. David Fincher. What is David Fincher for you? People, see his movies, watch them, support them when they come out. Gone Girl looks good.
But, you know,
Gone Girl trailer is actually really good.
You can skip Alien 3.
Oh, yeah, skip Alien 3. Or unless you get your hand on that director's cut and you can see that the director's assembly. I'm telling you, it's actually...
That has nothing to do with him, though.
No, but I'm just saying, especially if you've seen Alien 3... And you know, and then when you watch this assemblage and you see what was cut out, it's fascinating. It's fascinating how a studio can really chop up a movie and screw it up. Think they're doing something that's better, and really they're just fucking it all up.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, sometimes that's the name of the game. They're just trying to make that money.
Yes, sir.
Just trying to make those doughs. Well, thank you very much for listening to the show. We appreciate it. Thank you for downloading, Drew, sir. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir.
All right, we're going to get out of here. Remember to please... rate and review us on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. Hit us up on Facebook at Cinema Crespo Diso and on Twitter at Crespo Diso. And we'll see you for episode 85?
Yeah, sure.
I think so. 85 this weekend coming up. We'll be talking about that Sin City 2. All right. Peace out.